Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I have the honor of having with me Motion SVP Strategy, Alan Gangormez, who is going to talk about Motion's new social and strategy agency, O2, which just launched. Hello, Alan. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Paige. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So let's background this a little. This tends to be how I start, which is, why don't you just tell us about Motion? People who have long been involved with Promax, I feel like, know Motion well. But just in case, tell us about Motion and what its unique selling point is as an agency.
Motion has been around for quite a long time. So a three-time Entertainment Agency of the Year honoree. We've been around for 30 years. And, you know, there's a huge team of writers, editors, designers, filmmakers. And now with some new additions, we have a bunch of brand strategists and social digital experts added to the fold.
Why did Motion, looking at the landscape, decided it needed to create a new division specifically to handle social and digital?
I think as we've taken a look at where sort of the media mix is going, we started to realize that a lot of the creative that we were, you know, really focused on making as Motion would end up living in a variety of different places and not always necessarily in the best possible format or manner imaginable. And what it came down to was the need and understanding for all these new destinations where this content would ultimately get shared and put. It's one thing to cut a trailer or an AV asset with the mind for it to live on TV, but to also have the understanding and knowledge that it's going to be taken off of TV and live on social and shared in text messages and take on different lives of its own. It's figuring out how to have the content be able to be shared and have more legs in the best possible manner.
Why is that something that Motion felt like, and you felt like this needs its specific own roof or whatever to do it under, as opposed to just having it be part of what Motion offers overall?
It's interesting. So O2 is really a service to both our partners and to Motion as a whole. We're absolutely completely integrated with the agency, and it's not like we're some bizarro separate entity that only shows up to happy hours. We're right there in all the meetings and brainstorms and are part of the integrated workflow. But we realized in talking to a lot of our clients that they just didn't know that it was something that we had. Mm. And by being able to sort of formalize this and put this out there to the world, it allowed us to take a clear stance and say, you know, hey, we're taking these two disciplines of strategy and social and everything that they can bring to the table very seriously. And we want to start offering that more in different ways to existing and new partners.
I like the name O2. I like how it ties in with Motion. And again, probably most people listening to this know this, but Motion is M Ocean. It's very clever. And then I feel like O2 ties in nicely to that. So just as an example, like, can you give me an example? This is going to be hard for you to answer, but I'll ask you anyway. Okay. Of what the workflow looks like. Like, say you've got a client and they come in and they're, I don't know what they say, I've got X thing I want to promote. What does the workflow look like in terms of coming up with a strategy and then deciding what the creative is and what platforms the creative lives on?
It totally depends on where we come in the process. Mm-hmm. But let's just say in this example, we're brought in early on. What we end up doing is a fair amount of audience research. So we familiarize ourselves with the title and we start kind of building out through a variety of tools, leveraging things like MRI, YouGov, GWI, just a really good understanding of who it is that this is going to appeal to. And from there, we really start thinking about the themes, the stories, even some of the creative aesthetic that's going to resonate most with that target audience. And once we've kind of really built out a picture of who it is that we want to reach, we start thinking about what it is we want them to be saying. We're really focused on this idea of conversations and driving conversations that are meaningful and important. And if we can come up with creative that almost, I don't want to say dictates, but helps guide people down the path of conversation that we're hoping for, we can sort of ensure a certain level of engagement and interaction and buzz from the campaign that we're putting together. So that initial strategy and planning phase is really understanding the audience and ultimately coming up with that, you know, creative positioning, North Star, everyone has a different word for it, and ultimately kind of figuring out that's what we want to ladder up to. And then the next step is, where do we need to be in order to hit that audience? So, you know, we're definitely not in the camp that you need to be everywhere, right? It's not just, okay, open up every social channel and hope for the best. We're definitely against that. I would say there are plenty of times that partners come to us. And I think a recent example is TikTok, right? They said, you know, okay, we want to open up our own TikTok channel. And I think our first reaction was, we could do that, but what meaningful following would you be able to generate on that platform? You know, rather than take the budget and invest in creating original content for TikTok, why don't we take that budget and give it to creators and influencers who already have that following on TikTok that resonate with our audience that this could make sense with? I think what we try to do is be really smart about our distribution strategy when it comes to figuring out where the content's going to live. Because at the end of the day, you know, social, it hasn't been for a very long time, but it's no longer a place where if you build it, they're going to come. Right? You have to give them a million reasons to want to show up and then want to stay and then want to share. It's important to figure out the areas that you're actually going to win that battle.
Of course, what I want to ask is, oh, who was that client? But I know that I cannot ask that. can we talk about, I'm going to hold the TikTok thing because that's interesting, but can we talk about audience research? So when you're doing audience research, let's say around a show campaign, I'm sure it could be many things, let's say a show campaign, where do you start doing the audience research? Is that just you sort of out on the internet? Are you given specific data by the client? Are you doing focus groups? How do you determine who the audience is?
I mean, it's a little bit of everything. So we've definitely done some focus group research and stuff like that, depending on what assets we have and are allowed to share with a focus group, whether it's just like a synopsis or maybe we have a bit of the first script or a pilot episode. If we have that stuff, then a focus group is definitely an option. Otherwise, I mean, we do a lot of audience analysis based around the key talent, maybe a notable director is involved or some high profile members of the cast, and we can kind of start working backwards there. A lot of times we go for comparable titles, examine what worked and equally as important what didn't work, some things that we want to avoid and some stuff that we might want to adapt and change and make our own. And from there, we really start kind of building out core audience, maybe a secondary audience, and then what we like to call an opportunistic audience, usually a little bit broader, or something that maybe we see as a potential niche that could pop off. And, you know, once we kind of have those, we really start sort of building out more of the campaign framework that details out what the journey would be for each one of those audiences. So kind of laying out all the different key beats, the events, our messaging framework, and how ultimately these people are going to discover this series on whatever platform it is that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever, well, I'm going down two paths here, so I'll try to ask both. Have you ever, in doing your audience research, sort of determined, we think this psychographic and this psychographic and this psychographic will be interested in this show. And then as you've gone along, found, actually, no, these guys don't care at all. And then conversely found, oh, wait, there's this whole group over here that we didn't think about that are interested.
Yeah, I think that happens probably more often than a lot of people think.
I would think, yeah.
Because, you know, and this is actually a main reason why we want to marry strategy and social together, because social allows us to have such a real-time pulse on the conversation and what key themes are popping off and helps us understand what we got right and what we got wrong very quickly and allows us to pivot. But, you know, I think a lot of times you can go into a campaign thinking that, you know, X, Y, and Z moments are going to be the most popular, or, you know, this audience in particular is going to be the most excited. And then, you know, the series is streaming, the film is out, and suddenly it's an entirely different group of people who are the most excited about it, or a moment that everyone in, you know, both the partner and the agency side could have cared less about is the one shining thing that everyone wants to talk about and share on the internet. And it's about figuring how to pivot fast enough to make that part of the marketing plan in a way that feels genuine and thoughtful.
Okay, so let me follow up on that. How do you pivot fast enough?
I think when it comes to pivoting quickly, we have a saying that we really believe in. It's about being present, not perfect. And what that comes down to is not dying in a world of revisions. I mean, it's important to know that when things are living on social channels, they have a finite shelf life for the most part. And yeah, it's important to be part of the conversation at the right time in order to actually see the results and benefits of being part of the conversation. If you decide to go to like revision 7, 8, and then the moments have passed and then you show up, you actually just look pretty lame being a few days late.
Yeah, you look like you're trying too hard.
Absolutely.
Are you finding that because you get such real-time information off social platforms, that that's starting to lead the marketing strategy?
I would say that the information that we're able to get from social definitely has the ability to impact other channels a lot faster. Granted, there are certain things, like, you know, let's say a lot of out-of-home executions and stuff that have a much like longer lead planning, and once they're out on the world, they kind of are what they are. But when it comes to creating, especially, you know, digital media assets and ads that live on a variety of platforms, the information that we're able to get from social can really influence and tweak and change those extremely fast, especially when you've assembled a team that has the ability to produce that creative very quickly. It's definitely a benefit that a lot of our partners are looking to exploit.
When you're doing social assets on different platforms, are you kind of purposely trying out different pieces of creative to see what's resonating the best?
First off, we're not huge fans of posting the same piece of creative in every sure. location. I think there's always going to be a bit of a variety. Otherwise, there's no reason for someone to follow you on a variety of platforms. With that being said, you know, there's certain assets that have to live everywhere just based on the nature of what that is, like a trailer. I think what we like to do is really think about what's going to feel most native to the platform, what that format is, what's going to be consumed by the audience and shared. I think what we like to do is look at certain metrics that maybe not everyone pays the most attention to. So, you know, likes, comments, all that stuff are great. But we also really want to know how many people are direct messaging our assets to their friends. Because for us, that's a huge indicator, right? Another one that we love looking at on Instagram is how many people are actually saving it, actually putting it into one of those folders within the app that allow them to go back
and see all that
later. You can see all that through the analytics. And
okay. I feel like Instagram analytics used to not let you see that much, but I haven't looked at them in a while. So maybe that's changed.
That's all available right there. And I mean, those are much bigger movers in our mind, right? The content's mm-hmm. so good that people want to save it. It's so good mm-hmm. that you want to share it with a friend in a private message. That's a way bigger hand raise than just a like. So mm-hmm. we really want to figure out what type of content is causing that and how do we make more of it?
Is that a recipe that you can duplicate? Meaning you have a piece of content, you found that people were bookmarking it, or you found that people were sharing it with their friends. Are there certain pieces of it where you can say, this sort of feature of this content worked, we can try it again? Or do you feel like because of the way social is, you're having to sort of reinvent the wheel every time?
Actually, I mean, there's a lot of learnings that we take from the assets that do end up having those signals that get sent to us that we then use in the next iteration or on completely different campaigns. I think we're always mm-hmm. learning and we're always applying those learnings. And it's definitely led to more and more success of those factors.
Can you say, you know, are there certain types of content that you find do lead people to take those actions or certain features as part of that content?
You know what? I think that one of the most important features that we found that kind of tends to lead to more of those actions are bits of original content that feel like extensions of the series or the film that allow people to have a little bit more of an experience with the channel. So kind of extending the story or something that feels custom or unique just for that platform, something that feels like maybe the cast member or the audience is potentially breaking the fourth wall and talking directly to them, or especially if it's something that's derived off of the social listening that we've done. If we see someone talking, if we see thousands of people talking about a certain topic and then we create an asset specifically around that topic, a mm-hmm. lot of times those thousands of people are going to start sharing it amongst themselves. There are different signals that we look for when we think about putting this stuff together.
We haven't actually talked that much about you, so this might be another hard question to answer, but you've been at Motion for a while. Now you are sort of taking the lead on O2. This is the hard part of the question. What makes you the right guy for this job?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind is I've been in the social and strategy space for a while now, going on 14 years. And
oh, wow. Did it even exist that long?
It did, actually. I have a few friends that I still work with, and we recall the days that we were doing social on forums and Yahoo Answers and MySpace for bands.
Wow, okay.
So it's been a while, and we've definitely seen the evolution of it come about a whole different ways. I'd like to think that in terms of O2, I'm able to bring a pretty diverse experience to the table. For about 9 or 10 years, I was exclusively on the brand side of things, you know, working on brands like Beats by Dre and Converse, Spotify, a whole variety, hotels.com, mm-hmm. Frito-Lay, Pepsi. And then ultimately moving into the entertainment industry, being able to take a lot of the learnings that I had from the brand side and applying it to sort of the pace that things move in the entertainment space has really allowed us to sort of have a different perspective when it comes to building longer lasting conversations and more meaningful connections that sometimes don't exist on films that might only be relevant for 3 to 4 weeks in a conversation, or series that you know, come and go, might not be renewed. But we really try to figure out how to make some of those deeper connections with people that myself and my team that I've assembled have had success doing for a variety of different brands and in just about every vertical imaginable. I'd like to think that it's a mix of that experience that I'm able to bring to the table that sort of allows me to be the best person for this role.
How challenging is it to keep things in the conversation? Because I was just thinking about, let me think of a show. One is not springing to my mind, but I'll give you a counterexample. So, you know, Amazon's The Boys, and I feel mm-hmm. like you guys did work on The Boys. Is that true?
Yeah, Motion did work on The Boys season one.
Okay. All right. Well, little side shout out. I very much enjoy The Boys. It's really violent, but I still like it. But anyway, so The Boys this year, you know, they did a longer lead release strategy. So they did the first three and then an episode every week. And I think there's 8 in the season, which some people don't like and are complaining about. But that said, I do think it allows the show to stay in the conversation longer. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, like with Netflix, you'll see them drop a show and it'll be really in the conversation, but maybe for a week. And so I feel like, and especially also with movie releases, which we haven't seen for a while, but back when we used to have movie releases, same kind of thing. You might only see it in the conversation for opening weekend and then it kind of fades. So what are some strategies, and you don't have to give away the whole store or all your secrets, but what are some strategies for keeping this content in the conversation a little longer?
Kind of touching on the first part of what you said, it's definitely, there's definitely been a lot of studies around the pros and cons of a weekly release versus a full binge release model. And there are certain shows that come to mind. Well, I think two that were tracked initially in some of these studies that I saw were Game of Thrones and Westworld. And they were compared to Netflix titles like Stranger Things. And I think another title that was on it was The Mandalorian. And the week over week release model allows for more consistent peaks and valleys to be generated over a longer period of time than dropping everything at once. And mm-hmm. that's even why you've seen Netflix start experimenting with a week over week release model on certain series, mm-hmm. just to, I think, one, test the appetite of their audience in kind of adapting to that model. I don't know if you remember, but The Great British Bake Show was one of the first mm-hmm. like major shows that they decided to switch to week over week. I think there were a lot of people that are upset, but also it created a conversation every single week. So you could see that even though people were a little bit grumpy about having to wait a week to watch the next episode, it still worked out pretty well. I think what we're starting to see is either you have the one giant tidal wave for a week, or you get the consistent week over week conversation. But both prove to have different challenges, because in the weekly release model, it's definitely a much longer campaign that you're planning for, and you have to think about how to sustain the conversation from Monday to Friday until the next episode. Where with the streaming all at once model, you're really kind of building up to one huge moment, then that moment happens and you're able to gather data from the entire conversation and then figure out sort of a sustained campaign over a certain number of weeks or months that sort of helps usher that conversation and bring in some laggards to the actual streaming process. So it's two entirely different strategies that you end up having to deal with depending on sort of the release model. But I think both are really valid, and it absolutely depends on maybe the strength of the series or the show, or how you want to actually roll that out.
That's one part of this whole conversation and about strategy around entertainment marketing that I always find fascinating and mysterious, because I think you can have a strategy, but with entertainment, it's subjective. It has its own sort of locomotion that you can't control. I feel like you can guide it, but you know, you don't have a lot of control over it. And then on the flip side, if you have something like Game of Thrones, I mean, that's just a snowball rolling down a mountain to the point where I felt like, why does HBO even bother to market this show? But why not? You know, you've got this snowball, you might as well market around it. And I think it's interesting too, because the four shows that you just mentioned there, Game of Thrones, Westworld, Mandalorian, Stranger Things, I mean, those are also four pretty, I mean, those are four big shows. Game is still in the conversation. Mandalorian and Stranger Things stay in the conversation, even though they released it once. And I think that's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, and it's interesting about what I said about The Boys, because so there was a whole story in The Hollywood Reporter, I don't know if you saw, but it was with the creator showrunner Eric Kripke, and he was talking about how people were giving the show a one rating on Amazon because of this weekly release, and which is sort of ridiculous. But so yeah, but then it's almost like that sort of shows you how much the fans actually love the show, because they're so mad they're giving you this bad review. Anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, and also it would definitely be in the tone of the show for
yeah,
the marketing
totally.
to create some sort of asset celebrating all the 1-star reviews. That would definitely be.
That was like the Chase Crawford spot, right? Like he did a spot where he read reader mail and it was like, mm-hmm. I hate you guys, you suck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of those shows you can have a lot of creative fun with.
Okay. So one thing that you talked about in the release about O2 was social listening, which is a term I think we've all heard. But can you just talk about what social listening means, what it entails? And then do you have any examples that resulted in different creative or tweaking of the creative because you were socially listening?
I don't really like overcomplicating social listening. It's essentially just keeping your ear to the ground on what people are saying on your social channels and being smart about what it is you do with that information. I mean, everyone uses a different variety of tools to do it, but it's actually what you end up doing with the information that you're listening to that makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. I think a recent example for us, you know, when we were working on Blood and Water for Netflix, it was a small South African original. And I definitely think what we wanted to do was figure out a way to make it appeal to a global audience. So we worked on really listening around every single asset that we put out there to figure out what it was that people were resonating with the most. And with the first teaser trailer that went out, we really wanted to make it feel engineered and native for social. We went through a lot of rants revisions thinking about what exactly would this need to be. So when it appears in your feed, you're going to want to stop, you're going to want to watch it, and then you're going to want to talk about it. And once we kind of nailed that, we wanted to find out everything that people were talking about. And once we listened to all of that, that's really what drove the next round of creative to help push the campaign. And ultimately, some of those assets were the highest performing things. It also allowed us to help identify what influencers we would go and use and pursue for the rest of that campaign as well to help push that message out, seeing what were the audience groups that were really talking about this. And then we knew that we wanted to get the tastemakers of those groups to help even spread it to a wider audience. So it's definitely step one, you know, just being willing to listen and then mm-hmm. actually being willing to put those findings into action and quickly.
Can you talk a little bit about how you... this might be the wrong word, but how you recruit influencers or tastemakers to engage more with the content and share more?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to explain that is we like having conversations with them. You know, it's one of those things where there's still plenty of influencers where there's a little bit more of the formal approach of
go through my agent.
Yeah, going through their agent and stuff. But there are so many out there that are still independent, that are excited to work with brands for the first time, who want to do something a little bit more genuine. And I actually have a couple people on my team. Shout out to Amaka, who is awesome on the Blood and Water campaign, who are just fantastic at finding the ones that still want to do something that feels real and new, and kind of diving in and having those conversations with them and figuring something out that works not only for us and our needs, but for their audience in a way that makes everybody feel happy. And I think mm-hmm. it's definitely about being co-collaborators with them rather than mm-hmm. just saying, this is what it is that we want to do. And you end up getting a way better product at the end of the day.
That sounds like either that would be amazing or challenging, but I guess that's true for so many things.
Yes.
let's stick with Blood and Water, because I feel like that is a show I have not watched, but I do feel like it's gotten buzz. So if you're going through those, creating those assets and doing social listening to fine tune them, when you're determining a platform strategy around those assets, what does that look like? And what I mean by that is, if you're going to take that those assets to Instagram versus TikTok, let's say, versus Facebook, how do you hone a strategy around each of those platforms?
It's what's interesting about Blood and Water is that is a show that had no social platforms whatsoever. We leveraged the Netflix South African brand, talent channels, as well as the influencer channels. And we were active on, you could just say, about every platform, but in a different way. You know, with TikTok, we kicked off a variety of challenges with content that we put out there and resulted in, you know, in millions of uses of the hashtag Blood and Water. On Instagram, we really wanted to figure out what was the visual aesthetic and story that we were able to tell. What were the assets that were going to get shared the most? We put that together and that's what was designed for there. And then we also wanted to figure out like what was the best way to arm our talent with assets that felt most relevant to their audience. So we went out and created custom assets for that. It's a lot of custom creation at the end of the day. You know, you want people to experience something different wherever they go and be surprised that that is what they're engaging with and excited about what it's for.
That's an interesting piece too. Like, how much do you feel like your work involves not just creating social for necessarily like the show platform or the channel platform, but actually for the talent platform, for the influencer platform, for these extended, you know, these extended handles that are maybe 1 or 2 degrees out from the original?
I think it's important to remember those as viable distribution channels when you're coming up with your strategy. And to get that in early on, because, you know, a lot of times, depending on the caliber of talent, it's a longer conversation. But if you're able to have those conversations early and figure out something that the talent feels comfortable with and that works for the campaign as well, that's fantastic. You need to use it.
Would that involve, I don't know if I should stick with Blood and Water because that might be too remote of a production, but for the sake of this, let's stay there. But would that involve going to one of the talent from Blood and Water and shooting like original content with them? You know, like what does that look like in terms of what you create for them?
Yeah, well, I guess we could do like 2 different examples here, right? So on the Blood and Water side, that was brand new talent, young,
right?
Super excited to be involved in everything. I would say the level of difficulty in making things happen there was relatively low. And that entire campaign was done during sort of like the peak of the pandemic. So a lot of assets were shot custom over Zoom and put together afterwards. But I think on the flip side,
they were available.
On the flip side, you know, we recently worked on Unhinged for Solstice Studios with Russell Crowe. And, you know, that's a big name star. And I think a lot of that is, you know, putting together a suite of ideas that you want to get him involved in allowing him and his team to sit with those ideas, think about which ones make the most sense for Russell and the brand, and then being willing to adapt and mold to some of the feedback that they're inevitably going to bring to the table. And we were able to produce some really fun spots with him, especially him reading the Am I the Asshole subreddit on Reddit. he was a great sport on everything. It was a lot of fun to work with, and you know, we saw great traction on those assets as well.
Yeah, see, I mean, I think that's the kind of like drilling down that you don't necessarily think about on social strategy, which is, I mean, you're creating a whole separate campaign around Russell Crowe. You're not just doing, you know, social for Unhinged.
Yeah, but you can't forget those channels, because a lot of times, I'm about to say something so obvious, but a lot of times the talent is a major draw for the film, and they're going to have more of a social following than your social channel for the film or series will ever have. So how are you going to mobilize their existing fan base who's just going to be excited about them being in this in a way that makes sense for everybody involved?
Do you feel like in general now talent like that gets it and is up for participating?
You know,
some of them.
Yeah, I mean that's the honest answer, right? And there's still plenty that you run into that are like, I don't do social, and they
crazy.
Just leave it at that.
You crazy. Okay, last question, which is actually sort of a broad question, but one trend I've seen lately, this is also kind of obvious, but a lot of agencies are announcing sort of initiatives like what Motion has announced, which is the merging of creative strategy with data-driven insights, and just sort of marrying the two. So you've seen that with, you know, Stun and Known, Stun is now Known, and then Fathom, working with Smith Geiger to get their data. Motions is, they all have their own little twist on it. But I sort of feel like, is it even possible to be a creative agency in this space right now if you don't have that?
No, I mean, I think the easy answer is no. I think once upon a time, and it really not that long ago, what really mattered most was beautiful, top-notch, stunning creative. Mm-hmm. And over time, the need for more data and analytics and understanding of where it's going to go and how it'll be released and all that stuff is just extremely important. And you can't not have one without the other. It's like the, you know, the classic saying goes, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, did it even happen? And that goes the same with beautiful creative, right? If
you make something absolutely stunning, it's the most beautiful tree.
Yeah. And you post it and no one sees it, you know, does it even matter? It doesn't. So I think it's just the inevitable marriage between the two. And really it's something that's existed for a long time on the brand side of things. I think it's now just going to be quite similar as it is on the brand side and the entertainment side.
Do you feel like, I mean, you talked about your background. It sounds like you actually come more from the analytics side. So for you, is it pretty natural to marry the creative and the data versus like creatives? I often ask them if they feel encroached upon by having to encapsulate the data or incorporate the data. But for you, do you feel like it's a pretty natural process and it doesn't really bother you creatively?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say that like, I think my background coming from more of the like the traditional strategy side of things, we definitely embrace data when we're coming up with our plans. And I would say that I'm definitely not an analyst, but I'm a strategist that just loves numbers and loves understanding what they mean and doesn't feel like research and data constrict my ability to be creative in a campaign, but actually allows me to be creative in a smarter way.
Right.
And I think to me, that's a little bit more exciting.
Right. So it's almost like it guides your creative. It improves your creative.
Yeah. Because I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's awesome to make something that's awesome, but it's even more awesome when that awesome thing works. Right. That's a rewarding feeling. You know, I think that's definitely what we're looking to do here. Make things that are not only awesome, but work.
All right, that's a perfect place to end on. Alan, thank you so much. Congratulations on the launch of O2, and I really appreciated your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure, and we will talk again soon. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.